A wise man once said, to truly live, you must do one thing each day that scares you. Congratulations! You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Scary, huh?
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, whatever.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is indeed the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? No, that's not me. No, I was not in a boys band. No, I didn't eat 63 hot dogs to win the title of hot dog eating champion of the world. No, that's not me. No, never mind. How was your July 3rd? I don't care about the 4th. How was your July 3rd? All right, how was your July 4th? How's your July 5th going? Looking forward to July 6th? How about July 7th? Can't wait for July 8th. What's going to happen July 9th? I don't know what's going on with July 10th. I canceled my plans for July 11th. Thanks for being here. You didn't have to do this. You didn't have to do this. You're going to regret this. I swear you are. Anyway. Well. By the way, before I start the show, would you please, no matter what platform you're listening to this on or which radio station, would you please like me and follow me? Or you can follow me and like me too. Or you can like me and then follow me. Follow me and then like me. Why would you follow me if you didn't like me? Or click on love him. I know there's no place to click for loving. Let's start with the like thing. If you do that, I'd appreciate it. My social media manager says I must ask of this every once in a while. And my social media manager says you must also pay me on a periodic basis. Anyway, well, I hope you did have a July 4th of niceness. I guess the big news, well, there are two big pieces of news. One is trivial, the other is quite serious. First the trivial, then we'll build. Joey Chestnut, this freak of nature, went to Coney Island yesterday along with other participants and competed for eating the most hot dogs in one sitting. Within a 10-minute period, Joey Chestnut ate 64 hot dogs with the buns. It's the buns that'll kill you. The hot dogs will just knock you out and tear your insidings into mush. But you don't want to eat too much bread. So, Joey, I mean, one could say congratulations, but that's not congratulations. That's like, you freaking idiot. Oh, God. And people, like, they watch this competition in droves. They actually broadcast it on sports networks. I mean, I you know, okay, all right, if this is the society I'm living in, hello, Joey Chestnut, my ass. Hey, Joey, what'd you have for dinner, huh? What do you have for dinner after you had 64 hot dogs for lunch? And by the way, there was a two-hour rain delay at Coney Island where the competition took place. I don't know. I don't know what that does to your psychological prep to eat 64 hot dogs in a 10-minute period. I assume the rain just plays with your head, you know? What do you do? Do you stare at a picture of a hot dog? Do you bathe in mustard the night before? I don't know. I don't know how you prep for this, Joey. Unless your major form of prep is being a moron. Maybe that's part of it. And by the way, moron is a very ugly word, but I've just used it. Okay. So much for Joey chest face, chest mount, whatever. Shouldn't Joey Chestnut be the champion of eating like a record number of chestnuts within a 10-minute period? Wouldn't that be a little... Maybe he should change his name to Joey Hot Dog or Frank Footer. Well, America should be proud. Yesterday was July 4th, celebrating Independence Day with a record number of mass shootings in a 24-hour period across the country. Nice. Congratulations, man. Keep it up, huh? July 4th to me is gunshots and explosions. There you go. Good times. Good times. And we don't even have a ban on assault weapons, which kind of makes the most sense of anything. But we don't do it. It's just, I almost have to laugh about the stupidity of this. I don't understand it. As conservatives are taking away our freedoms one by one, I mean, I this is just all messed up. It's all messed up. Anyway, I got to tell you a funny story. This blows my mind, and perhaps I shall blow your mind. There'll be mutual blowing going on here. I went to the supermarket yesterday, as I do frequently, because I love to eat and put food in my house so that I can eat it subsequently. I went to a local supermarket, and I was looking for hot dogs because yesterday was July 4th, and I had no hot dogs in my house, and I, all of a sudden, in Joey Chestnut fashion, wanted to have a hot dog or two. Not 64 of them, a hot dog or two. I already had the buns, but lo and behold, no hot dogs. So I go into the supermarket, and there on the shelf are the hot dogs. Look, I'm very conscious of what I put in my mouth, food-wise. And so I went for the Hebrew National Reduced Fat Hot Dogs. I checked out all the labels. I know hot dogs are the stupidest things in the world. So I'm looking for the healthiest under circumstances. They had chicken and turkey hot dogs. I'm sorry, that's not necessary. I'm looking for the beef hot dogs. I find Hebrew National. Quite expensive, to be honest with you. Nice and skinny. I don't like, I like the skinny hot dogs because there's less fat involved, less calories. 100 calories per hot dog. Half the fat of the others. Good choice, Ron. So I bring these skinny little hot dogs up to the register, and it's just the hot dogs. I bought nothing but. I had everything else, just needed the hot dogs. This middle-aged woman is standing at the register waiting to check me out and my one little package of hot dogs. When I say middle-aged, I don't know what I'm talking about. She was not young in the sense of just getting out of college or about to get out of high school, nothing like that. She was not old in the sense that she was elderly in that category, probably hadn't joined AARP just yet, although every year it seems like you can join AARP earlier and earlier. Used to be 60, now it's 50. Eventually, out of college, you're a senior. I don't know. People are saying that 70 is the new 50, and yet AARP is lowering its standards. I don't know. Anyway, so she's middle-aged. So I go up to the register, and I put the package in front of her. She scans them. And there weren't many people in the supermarket. She starts up a conversation with me by commenting on my purchase. So she scans the thing, and she says, and she looks up at me, and she says, "I like the big fat ones." And I was taken aback. I didn't know what to say. I mean, here's a middle-aged woman looking at me as a man and telling me she likes the big fat ones. Obviously, she was talking about the hot dogs. In my mind, it opened up a whole world of possibilities. So she says to me, looking right into my eyes, "I like the big fat ones." And, you don't talk to people like this when you don't know them. I responded to that by saying, and I shouldn't have said this, it's just sometimes I say things that are wrong. I have filters, but sometimes the filter is not working. So the response to "I like the big fat ones" by this woman, my response was, "I bet you do." Why did I say that? "I bet you do? Ron, what are you doing?" Well, fortunately, this middle-aged woman was not exactly expansive in her thought process. So her response was, "Yes, I do." And, otherwise she should have slapped me, which she didn't, because she didn't understand what I was saying. And when I left the supermarket, I kicked myself in the head. I'm like, "Ron, stop saying things like that." "I like the big fat ones." "I bet you do." "Whoa, wow, ugh, a stranger, Ron, seriously?" With some people, that could have started a very fruitful sexual relationship, but not there. Yeah, sometimes I say things that I shouldn't say. Remember around my birthday, I think I was in a store and I was using this birthday discount. Some stores give you birthday discounts. They give you like 2% off of the price of the whatever. I think the cashier said to me, "Happy birthday," noting that I was using my birthday coupon. And my response to her was, "Thank you. You too." And I said, "What are you saying? What do you mean, you too? Happy birthday. Hey, you too." "No, it doesn't work like that." "Have a nice day. You too. That works. Have a nice birthday. Hey, you too." You just sound like an idiot. But I did that. And again, when I left the store, I kicked my, "What are you saying, you too? It doesn't make any sense." "Have a nice birthday. You too. Whenever you happen to have yours." Oh, God. Anyway. All right. Here's the horrible fact of the day.
Ladies and gentlemen, please prepare yourselves. It is that time again for Ron's fact of the day.
So I'm watching TV yesterday because there was really absolutely nothing else to do. And every commercial, and I mean every commercial, if there are 40 commercials, 39 of them are about diseases that you can get. Either you have it, you're just about to have it, or you have it. It's all about diseases on television now. Diseases and law attorneys, slip and fall accidents. Those are the only two commercials I remember. And the insurance commercial with Flo. I don't even know what the name of the insurance company is that's on all the time. There's a lot of them, but I don't even know the names of the insurance companies. That's how ineffective their stupid moronic commercials are. Anyway, that's not what I'm talking about here. Every commercial seems to be about diseases and these things that you can take, pills, injections, in order to relieve the disease that you may be suffering. And my supposition from watching all of these disease commercials, which, by the way, is depressing to watch no matter what. You're watching a nice comedy show, you're enjoying yourself, and a commercial comes on and tells you that you may have this thing that will cause you to die. But don't worry, we have a medicine for that. Well, actually, you may have one, but it doesn't really help because they tell you all the side effects and reactions that you can take by taking this medicine that can save your life. And in doing so, this medicine can destroy you internally and cause possible death. Okay, that didn't make me feel too good. They did one for an antidepressant. Now, a lot of people are depressed, and there's no question as to why that is. Because things are a little tense these days. We just came out of a pandemic. People don't have money. There's inflation. There's always some kind of problem. Always some kind of problem. Some kind of national threat of world war or something. Or your finances suck. Or you have one of these diseases. So everybody gets depressed. Everybody is depressed. As a matter of fact, if you're not depressed, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you depressed? What are you, insensitive? So a lot of people have depression, so they have to take antidepressants. Here are some of the side effects of taking antidepressants. Are you ready? Here's the list. Feeling sick, headache, muscle pain, reduced appetite, confusion, feeling listless and tired, disorientation, agitation, psychosis, seizures, diabetes. These are all side effects of taking antidepressants on a regular basis. Diabetes, stomach tears. Oh, that's fun. And here's the kicker. When you take antidepressants, it can cause suicidal thoughts. Okay, so it can cause the very thing that you're trying to avoid. I feel like suicide because I'm depressed. Well, we have a medicine for you. Side effect, suicidal thoughts. I mean, this list is basically why you're taking the damn thing to begin with. Now, granted, not everybody gets this long list of possible problems that the medication can cause, but you can get just one of them. I mean, seriously. And by the way, how do you know if the medicine is causing you to be tired? Raise your hand if you're tired all the time. Yep, me too. That's called aging. Thank you very much. That's called a lack of energy is called aging. You don't want to run around too much when your body hurts every once in a while. Or when arthritis. Oh, gee, what are the side effects of taking rheumatoid arthritis medications? Do you know what one of them is? Death. There's one side effect you don't want, huh? What's the worst side effect from this? That I feel tired, or I feel nauseous, or I have diarrhea? Or death. I mean, that can be bad, too. Come on, man. Can't they come up with something that it relieves the condition, and it also, like, there's no side effects, or the worst side effect you have is, I don't really care for society anymore. Okay, that's acceptable. I can deal with that. That's actually a good thing. or one of the side effects of taking the arthritis medicine is you don't really want to go on Facebook as much. Oh, no. Oh, I can't take it then. It's crazy, man. It's crazy, man. I have a guest coming up on today's show. I do hope you had a nice July 4th, for whatever reason I said that. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, my guest will be joining us. But until then, there's this.
Gentlemen, have you ever been in the mood for a nice knish or maybe bagel and a schmear, but you're also in the mood for some exotic dancing? You can't find those in the same place. Until now. I'm Moishe Kaufman, inviting you to come visit us at Moishe's Knish and Strippers, the area's first genuine kosher deli and titty bar. Come in and rock out with your locks out and check out our dancers. These girls are so nice, you'll plots, and they're all certified kosher. Maybe not the kind of girl you bring home to mother, but once you see Delia fold a dollar bill without using her hands, you won't care what mom thinks. Look, Bubby, you're in a strip club. That alone is enough to kill her. So live a little. Every Thursday, don't miss our buns and brisket buffet from noon to 6. Moishe's Knish and Strippers is closed on the Sabbath. Hey, we might be a little unorthodox, but we're not heathens.
Tufik Ringwall joins us now. He is an author, and it's What We Lost Inside the Attack on Canada's Largest Children's Charity. This is interesting. This is something I was not aware of. Is this well known that there was a problem?
Well, you know, it's really not as well known as you might think in the U.S. Mm-hmm. In Canada, it might as well have been the Iran-Contra affair.
Wow.
It was the second most covered news story in 2020, after COVID and probably before the economy. And it was splashed on the nightly news every night and the cover of every newspaper. So huge story in Canada, covered a little bit in the U.S. as a bit of an ethics scandal, mm-hmm. a political scandal, less about We Charity, and has percolated less down here, but I think is a pretty big deal for Americans too.
Yeah, I mean, when you couple a story about things going wrong and charities, that's a strange marriage of complication.
You're right. It is, you know, it's a strange story that the book is about what we lost. And it's about what in Canada has come to be known as the We Charity scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, which is an unfair term, I think, because it really lumps together We Charity with the scandal.
Right.
But you're right. It's essentially a political controversy and a political ethics scandal. And at the center of it was the relationship between certain politicians and this charity. And what ended up happening was that the charity, you know, became a focal point. All
yes.
the politicians made out fine in the end, and the charity was destroyed and closed in Canada. And I thought it was really unjust the way it all went down, which is why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
Because I was a board member of the charity when it happened. And this is a bit of an inside perspective.
And thus your interest and connection. Okay. You know, it seems to be under the general category of how misinformation takes a life on of its own, which, as you probably know, in the United States, we have that going on big time all the time. It does run under that. It's the same kind of scenario in a way, isn't it?
It absolutely is. So I'm a Canadian originally, but I actually live in the U.S. right now.
Ah.
I practice law in New York. I'm a partner in law
cool.
in New York.
Cool.
And So I see it on both sides. And one of the themes of this book really is what I've dubbed the Americanization of Canadian politics.
Oh, God.
You know, everybody knows what I mean right away when I say it.
Yeah.
Because for many Canadians, I think there was always a sense that politics north of the border is a little more rarefied and a little less polarized than what you see here. And I
mm-hmm.
think this story of what happened to We Charity and how the media handled it, it really revealed that the politics in Canada is much closer to the finger pointing that we see here, you know, the unwillingness, the partisan infighting, win at all costs kind of nature of politics.
How much of the blame should be on the media? How did the media get this out of hand?
Yeah, so what the book puts a lot of blame both on politicians of all parties, but also on the media, because what really happened in Canada is I felt that there was a real piling on by the media and a reporting of the questions, but not the answers. So what happened here is you get a lot of innuendo and smoke and a lot of social media, fringe players on social media, peddling a lot of things that just weren't true. And you had the mainstream media, you know, effectively just saying, well, there's a scandal, you know, let's report on it and just put it all out there as though these things are issues. But they're not doing the work to, you know, tell you, look, there's fire or there's no fire. In other words, the answers were too boring to report on. They just reported the questions. And I really think there's a real failure of investigative journalism in Canada. And you see that even today where We Charity is right now suing the CBC, which is one of the most, you know, notable broadcasters in Canada, in federal court in Washington, in the U.S., for defamation relating to all of this, and actually won a decision just yesterday to keep that case in the U.S.
Wow. It sounds like the Fox News lawsuit.
Well, you know, actually, several journalists have actually compared it to the Fox News lawsuit. Yeah. There's some people who've written about just that connection, and I think it's actually going to be a big news story this week. That decision just came out yesterday, and I know there's going to be a lot of talk about it.
Yeah. So what do we learn after this debacle has been somewhat explained to the public? You know, sometimes when you explain these things to the public and they pass, that the larger swath of the public still believes what they heard the first time and didn't even pay attention to the explanation.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I like to think that this book has opened some people's eyes, particularly in Canada. It went to number one on the bestsellers list in Canada for nonfiction for a period of time. And I do think that people who have read it have really been receptive to the view that maybe they need to be rethinking this. But you're absolutely right that one of the problems in our society is that, you know, again, once you just see a lot of smoke, people assume that there's fire and they've moved on. Yeah. And it's very hard when they form that assumption in their mind, even when it's not fact-based, to convince them that maybe they don't know the full story, the full picture. And that is an uphill battle.
Yes.
But it's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because I felt like a charity was destroyed in the process of a political fight. And it wasn't just any charity.
Yeah.
It was a charity that was supporting millions of children around the world. And no one was really talking about that loss. And I just, that didn't make sense to me.
Well, I guess the greater loss would be those that did engage in charities, but now think twice because there's some form of mistrust involved.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I'll give you an example. In Canada in general, We Charity was connected to thousands of other charities because one of the things it did was actually encourage, it supported volunteerism among young people. That was one of its mandates. And so definitely when this whole scandal happened, it caused a whole contraction of the nonprofit sector within Canada and a lot more concern and, you know, just guardedness that in some ways is healthy and important for people to be vigilant and thoughtful, but in other ways, I think, really raises a lot of doubts where there needn't have been any.
What kind of challenges did you have in writing this book? Did people tell you, don't do this?
Yeah, I mean, so there was a lot of, I think, toxicity around the name We Charity in Canada. By the time I put pen to paper, really, you know, the charity and the two co-founders were, you know, had been really maligned. So I think there were a lot of people who thought, you know, don't write this book. I had a very helpful publisher, Optimum Publishing in Canada, and its leader, Dean Baxendale, had really approached me about the book, was very enthusiastic of bringing the story forward and, you know, getting the word out. But I think there were a lot of people who were resistant to talking to me about it. A lot of people who just have a very strong view, not really backed up by much, that there's nothing more to say here, that, you know, the public already knows everything. But I think, like I said, so the big challenge has been writing it and getting people to actually engage with it and believe that they don't know everything already that they need to know, particularly in Canada. Right. And so, but it's full of surprises. And I think a lot of people have realized that the reviews have been good, and therefore, you know, hopefully more and more people are picking it up and giving it a chance.
Well, in the name of getting the proper information out, I know that you have some people that have endorsed your writing here in a very nice, positive way.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I was very proud of is the audiobook. It was very important to me, you know, be read by not just me, because I'm a first-time author and perhaps don't have that much name recognition, be read by someone who really understands the issues. And so I was gratified when Martin Luther King III, the eldest son of Martin Luther King Jr., he agreed to read the audiobook, and he does that. And we put that out even in podcast form now on Spotify and Apple Books, because, you know, he saw this story, read the book, understood the issues, and sort of said, look, this just seems like a real injustice. Not necessarily the civil rights injustice that, you know, you might think of him as synonymous with, but really just injustice, like things working, you know, poorly for bad reasons and innocent people being harmed. And I think he felt it was such a great example. So he reads the audio version, and I think that, I think lends a lot of credibility to the idea that this is really an important story worth thinking about if you care about fair play and justice.
Yeah, yeah. And activists such as Martin Sheen. I mean, these are people these are people that are want the information to get out honestly and truthfully, and are activists for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Martin Sheen's been another great support on this story.
Well, are you working on something else by any chance now that you've entered this marvelous world?
Well, you know, I am not at the moment. I'm really focused right now on making sure that what we lost, the word gets out there. I have a day job too, a busy law practice as a litigation partner at Milbank in New York. Yeah. And so, you know, managing both those competing tasks, and then we'll think about what comes next.
Okay. Got a lot on the plate there. It's What We Lost Inside the Attack on Canada's Largest Children's Charity. Is there a website involved as well?
Yes, absolutely. They're www.whatwelost.com.
Perfect.
We'll tell you everything you need to know, including direct you to, you know, to all the right places at Amazon and everywhere else if you want to get the book.
And also, you got to read the book or go to the website and find out what actually happened, the entire story, and then you'll quite understand the reactions. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Tufik.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the time.
Pleasure. Take care.
Take care.
All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you to my guest, and thank you to you for dropping by. Hey, guess what? I'm going to be doing this again tomorrow. Huh? Really? Yeah, I just said that. So will you join me then? Can we make an appointment? Can we make a date, perhaps? Is that a little too strong for you? Tomorrow, I'll do another show for you. Okay, cool. But until that time arrives, have a wonderful day. I wish you peace. We'll be right back.